Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Covers.
What?
A Legus.
I mean, it's just one of my favorites of all time.
E-L-G-S-E-S, Eagles!
That's the mayor of Philadelphia. That's the mayor of Philadelphia who doesn't know how to spell the Eagles.
Yeah, that's great. Who are the chefs?
Right. Did you see the one that's going around now where it says refs in the end zone?
Haters are going to hate.
I mean, it's not even close. E-L-G-S-E-S.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd love to see it.
You got to feel good if you live in Philadelphia. Like, my sister lives there. I said that to her. She goes, nobody likes this mayor anyway. So
the MVP finalists are out. Josh Allen. Saquon Barkley, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, Lamar Jackson. Those will be your five candidates for the MVP. The offensive rookie finalists are also out. Brock Bowers, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Bo Nix, Brian Thomas Jr. The NFL is in good hands, fellas.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Go over those MVP candidates again.
Josh Allen, Saquon Barkley, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff.
If you're taking the word literally most valuable player, it's Barkley. Because I don't think that team is any good without Barkley on it right now. Like, he's the reason they're in the NFC championship game, right? Am I speaking out of turn here?
No, I have no argument for that.
They have an amazing defense. I give them some credit. Top two defense in the league. But I'd agree with you. The offense runs through him.
Yeah, I mean, and look where they are. Yes, they're at the, like, Burrow didn't make the playoffs, cross his ass off. He's no better than Carson Wentz.
I would say if you're getting critical, I would take Jared Goff off the list
because of
supporting cast, to be fair. I mean, this is where it gets really critical. Burrow, you take out because of the record.
Right.
Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry helped.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar was still fantastic.
Right.
Josh Allen, I would argue if you wanted me to not say Saquon Barkley, I'd say Josh Allen.
Yeah, those are the two it should come down to.
Because name four offensive players that he has.
That's exactly right.
Right, like, yeah. I mean, obviously Mac and I can sit here and be like, well, he's got Kincaid, he's got this guy, he's got, you know, Hollis, he's got Coleman, he's got Cook, he's, you know, whatever. But, I mean,
hardly a household name like Detroit, Kansas City, you know.
Cincinnati.
I mean, look at all that talent they had on off. And I don't want to hear that their defense didn't give them an eye. You're the MVP. Patrick Mahomes didn't have a defense and went to an AFC championship game. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, losers.
I mean,
people forget that.
Yeah.
People just, oh, you had a bad defense. Patrick Mahomes didn't have a defense for three years.
I'm tired of the Joe Burrow derangement syndrome, because that's what's out there right now. Joe Burrow isn't any better than Andy Dalton in 5 years with the Cincinnati Bengals. Andy Dalton went to the playoffs 5 times in 5 years. Joe Burrow went twice. Stop making excuses for Joe Burrow. Seriously, the Patrick Mahomes year that we went to that AFC title game and almost beat New England with Bob Sutton and D Ford and Ike, Patrick Mahomes had to put up 50 a game just to give his team an opportunity because that defense was so bad. Yeah. And we're going to sit here and make these excuses for Joe Burrow, who didn't make the playoffs, barely had a winning record, and talk about him in the MVP. Patrick Mahomes had no defense, led the world in everything, went to an AFC championship game, pulling this defense across the finish line. That's what a most valuable player does. If Joe Burrow is really a valuable player at all at that quarterback position, you need to overcome your defense like Patrick Mahomes does, or sit back down.
Who were the five at offensive rookie?
Brock Bowers. Let me find it. It's right here. Brock Bowers, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Bo Nix, Brian Thomas Jr.
Okay, I'm going to leave the room right now because they just announced the assistant coach of the year finalists. Where the hell is Spags?
What? Yeah. That is true.
Oh, my God.
Who Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson, Brian Flores, Vic Fangio, and Joe Brady.
How is Spags not on that list?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because this is going to be Spags versus Joe Brady this weekend, too. And this is Joe Brady's, you know, second shot at Spags' defense. Put up 24 against him last year. Now, all of a sudden, it's like playoff time number two. Joe Brady, you're a hot commodity. Welcome Steve Spagnuolo to the party as well.
Yeah. I was thinking about it yesterday. Chiefs win this game. Spags would be 3-0 in the postseason against Josh Allen, right? Or 4-0 in the postseason against Josh Allen. 2-1 in Super Bowls against Tom Brady. I mean, talk about Dragon Slayer right there.
You're Comeback Player of the Year finalist list is also out, the one that Mac loves so much as we go around the league here.
Sword sucks.
Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold, J.K. Dobbins, Christian Gonzalez, DeMar Hamlin.
No, DeMar Hamlin's not on this list again.
You'll see the graphic come up here on the TV soon, but this is from the NFL, and it's finalist for AP Comeback Player of the Year.
What's he coming back from?
He played last year.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's already happened. Yeah.
Is that the right list? Are you sure you got last year's or this year?
This is NFL golden check mark.
Wow.
Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold, J.K. Dobbins, Christian Gonzalez, and DeMar Hamlin.
Like, DeMar didn't play much last. You can't get comeback player of the year 2 years in a row. I mean,
no.
What's Sam? I mean, I'm a huge Sam Darnold guy, obviously. What's he coming back from? Just being bad?
Just not.
Okay.
So who are you going with on that list?
Yeah. J.K. Dobbins. J.K. Dobbins.
Okay.
Personally,
if we're giving the award for what it's meant to be a given away for, then J.K. Dobbins. Like, Joe Burrow played half the season last year. It's not like he came back from, like, you know, shattering his, like, knee bone. DeMar Hamlin played last year.
Right.
Christian Gonzalez, maybe deserving, missed the entire year, came back this year, played decent football at the defensive position. J.K. Dobbins has overcome so many injuries.
That guy's hurt all the time.
And was good this year. Like, got hurt again this year, but still played majority of the year.
Came back, yep.
Had 1,000 yards, I believe, rushing.
He did.
At the time the season started, he was like the number one touchdown scorer. Obviously, Cook is now that guy for the Buffalo Bills who you'll play this weekend. But I think J.K. Dobbins gets it. It'll go to Joe Burrow.
It'll go to Burrow.
It'll go to Burrow or Darnold.
Because Burrow won't get the MVP, and they'll be like, oh, he deserves an award.
No, he doesn't.
The Offensive Rookie of the Year award is, there's not a wrong answer.
I don't know who the answer is.
I mean, it's
Bowers
gonna be,
is legit, obviously.
Jaden Daniels, obviously, in the NFC Championship game as the quarterback. You have an argument he could be in the MVP conversation.
How's he not in the MVP conversation?
Because he's a rookie.
He's a rook.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes. Oh, that's right. He wasn't a rookie.
CJ Stroud wasn't in there either.
No, it's not. Doesn't make sense. But
you
can
give it to Brian Thomas Jr. Who was he getting passes thrown to him and he was that relevant in football? Mac Jones?
For a good portion of the season, Mac Jones was.
Bo Nix as a rookie quarterback goes to the playoffs. Beat the Chiefs, I guess. I don't know. Malik Nabers, who was his quarterback.
Right, he was great this year. Malik Nabers actually should win it because he put up 1,000 yards with Daniel Jones and Drew Locke and Tommy Cutlets throwing him the football.
Brock Bowers, rookie of the year. I mean, he fooled everyone to think that he looks like he's 23. He's actually 40 and plays like a rookie stud.
Wow, from the 913, was Ladd McConkey not on the Offensive Rookie of the Year list? That's just how good that list is.
That's why I said the NFL is in great hands.
Yeah, like, how's Ladd not on that list?
How's Xavier Worthy not on that list?
That's crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, didn't put up those numbers that those guys did, but that's another rookie in the NFL.
Yeah, but you got Mahomes, you got Kelsey, you know, like, those guys will overshadow.
Yeah.
I think the Offensive Rookie of the Year list is the legit one out
there.
That's
awesome.
The assistant coach list can bite me. The MVP can suck it. You know, all these other things that are out there right now that are just so managed by these voters. Football writers are becoming like baseball writers, man, and that's not a compliment.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah, you look at that, you wonder why the NFL is continuing to move the needle times a thousand. Because those guys are coming up, and they're just in their first year. I mean, that's insane. Rookie quarterback.
Who takes the step back of those five rookies? I would say Bowers, because you don't know who the quarterback is, but he played great, and you didn't know who the quarterback was this year, so it's not him. It's not going to be Malik Nabers, because anybody with air going through their lungs is going to throw him the ball better than what he had.
I think the safest take would be Daniels.
Yeah.
Just because video will be out, and I've seen what Stroud did last year, who had one of the best rookie years of all time. And Stroud took a back seat. Like, he didn't go terrible. It was, but it's like, but what you've done, like, so in order for him to not, you know, consider to take a step back, does he have to get to the NFC Championship game again? Like, in your first year, you got to the NFC Championship game. If you don't get there next year, it's like, well, he was better last year. So, like, I think that's the unfair answer to, like, who would necessarily take a step back. Obviously, I mean,
everybody thought Mahomes was going to take a step back, too. And for 2 years, we talked about, well, the tape's out on him. And the tape was never out on Patrick Mahomes, right?
Like, there was for about 7 weeks.
That's about it. Yep. And then he figured that out as well. So why, like, I know when that's going to be the narrative with Daniels and Washington, like, but why does that have to be the narrative every year? Why can't we just say, hey, this guy played great, let's buy in? Everybody's like, well, let's just wait and see what these defensive coordinators do, half who get fired next year anyway. So, like, I don't know, man. Like, why can't Daniels arrive? Why can't we just say, yeah, this guy's legit.
This guy's legit, and the sky is legit for the NFL. Sky is never going to be the end of sight for the continued success in the NFL. That's where sky is the limit, ceiling is the roof. All of that, plus Nate Taylor on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home, Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan.
Right back at it, 8 o'clock hour here on Fesco and Dusty with Mac Morey as well on 96.5 The Fan.
Mac, show your face. I got a text from a buddy of mine. He goes, who's the Keith Urban-looking dude that's on camera right now?
What? Keith Urban?
Have you ever been told you look like Keith Urban?
I'll take it, though.
What about Keith Suburban? Because you live in Johnson County.
Aha.
He also said to cut your hair, but I like your flowing locks. So.
Appreciate it. It's time for a little trim.
Yeah, do what everybody else tells you to do.
That's exactly right, yeah. Vote for DeMar Hamlin for Comeback Player of the Year, Joe Burrow for MVP, and Joe Brady for Assistant Coach of the Year. Go do that.
I mean, I actually kind of support the Joe Brady, but...
Yeah, that would maybe get Ben Johnson or Aaron Glenn or who was the other assistant coach that wasn't Spags on the
list? Joseph?
No, it was Brian Flores.
I don't know, man.
Tamar Hamlin being up for Comeback Player of the Year is bizarre
joke
to me.
Oh, I just pissed Alex Gold off. He's out there in the cubicle, and him and Cody are going back and forth, and I'm like, better chance at winning Comeback Player of the Year. Who deserves it more, Joe Burrow, Tamar Hamlin? And Alex thought I was, like, trolling, and he's like, well, Tamar Hamlin was up for it last year. I said, and he's up for it this year, too. He goes, no, he's not. And Cody's like, he is actually up for the award, actually. And, like, Alex like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He's like, we're just giving to a guy that was, like, terrible last year, so then they're good this year, they get the award? Because, like, Flacco got it last year, right? Because he came back out of nowhere.
Yeah,
led
but
his
that's
team.
A different story.
Right.
He led the Browns to the playoffs. He should have a monument built.
It's like, yeah, like, so are we giving to the guy that was necessarily ass in the league and then came back and had a good year? So, like, as Mac would say, does it go to Sam Darnold under that logic? Or do you give it to the guy that was injured, didn't play, and came back and was successful? If that's the case, it should go to J.K. Dobbins. Either way, here we argued about an award that doesn't matter.
I mean, but it's like, it's just when you start to think about it, like the comeback player of the year and who should get it and DeMar Hamlin being up for it. I mean, like, that's like saying next year Kadarius Toney's up for the comeback player of the year award because he stunk so bad and then went and played well, you know, for half a season somewhere. He gets up for, you know, player of the year, comeback player of the year award. Just because DeMar Hamlin played bad last year and didn't play much at all last year, doesn't mean he's like he should have been the comeback player of the year last year. The fact that he stepped foot on a football field last year should have won him that award, right?
Agreed.
Yeah, it's like when Alex Smith woke it.
That's right.
Won it.
Yeah, but now that's over, man. Mm-hmm. Like that part is over. We're 2 years removed from that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Next year, Rashee Rice is going to be my vote.
That's exactly right. That's
yeah. It.
And that's who should win it. If he has like 1,200 yards and like seven touchdowns, that should be your winner.
Well, it should be because he broke his leg. He came back and played well. I think it should go to somebody who's probably hurt that came back.
It's probably going to go to Daniel Jones when he starts at quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. He goes 14-3.
What if Daniel Jones does do that? Oh, my God, right?
The Chiefs win a three-peat. Daniel Jones comes back and has the Sam Darnold year. My NFL career's over.
Let me ask you this. Who if Daniel Jones goes 14-3 again next year, right, with this guy, Kevin O'Connell, does he get like past, does he pass Andy Reid and like quarterback guru, Darnold, Cousins, Jones?
He'd probably get hired as the Dodgers' new manager. The Los Angeles Dodgers have hired Kevin O'Connell as their GM, manager, and owner.
That's exactly right, yes.
That's exactly where that would go.
But golly. I mean, but seriously, like if he turns Daniel Jones around, my God.
I mean, he's obviously not going to start, but like that'd be just absolutely something. Absolutely something if that happened. Hell, you could even throw like Kareem Hunt in a conversation as comeback player of the year.
Yeah, absolutely you could.
Somebody
yeah.
gets credit for that from the 913 on the text line. Don't want to steal somebody's thunder. We'll have Nate Taylor here in just a second as he'll join us as he is on the line. So, Mac, you know what to do. Let's get Nate Taylor up on the phone.
He's the only man in history to win a race in a hot dog costume and break the news that Chris Jones is back with the Chiefs.
I'll get on that, coach.
Yeah, all right.
Here's Nate Taylor from The Athletic.
That's right, Nate Taylor, every Thursday at 8:25. It is presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them. 816-221-1750. Comeback player of the year, DeMar Hamlin. What say you, Nate Taylor?
Sure, fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We've lost track of all awards. They don't mean anything.
Now, to be fair to DeMar Hamlin, this is his first time as a true starter. He was becoming basically a starter when obviously he had the cardiac arrest in Cincinnati a couple of years ago. But, you know, he's a full starter now. The Bills are a very good team. I'm not going to say they're good because, like, he's great. But he's a serviceable starter. You know, it's hilarious that last year we gave this award to Joe Flacco because, you know, he just said, hey, let's just play YOLO ball. And it, by the way, kids, it was amazing that he got the Cleveland Browns to the playoffs. But there's not – I understand that there's not, like, a candidate that jumps out to you. And DeMar deserves all the credit in the world for his perseverance and his willingness to – try to make the most of his career after something we really hadn't seen in the modern NFL of a player's life, you know, basically stop for a few minutes, you know, just after a normal looking collision in the middle of the field against T. Higgins. Sure.
Fair enough. If you want to. How about Spags not being a finalist for assistant coach of the year, though? That's the one that kind of, you know, it rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah. Can you remind me? Because, again,
it was Joe Brady.
I have not looked at this list.
Joe Brady, Brian Flores, Aaron Glenn,
Ben Johnson,
and there was one other guy that was listed on there as well.
Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. The guy from Philadelphia who made lasagna during COVID when he was coaching the Broncos.
Vic Fangio.
Yes.
You look, Vic Fangio, I don't know who his press person is, his publicist, but man, Vic Fangio gets all the love.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that doesn't surprise me. It is a shame because you're you know, it's the same thing with Andy Reid. You're a product of your own consistent success, which therefore means, like, you know, what am I supposed to do with any of this? Like, you're good every year. Or, you know, you obviously have a top five defense when you got rid of L'Jarius Sneed and Willie Gay's not on the team. And you have it's not like he had an infusion of rookies. I mean, he had Jaden Hicks, but, you know, it's disappointing. If it was up to me, I think Liam Cohen is probably the best out of that group. That's who I would vote for because he stabilized and got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to be even more creative than last year under Baker Mayfield. And as you know, it's unfortunate they lost in the playoffs, but it's not because of his coaching. It's just a few. I mean, we've learned this in all these games. It's just a few minor mistakes. So, you know, the botched snap, the the fumble in the fourth quarter against the Commanders really flipped the momentum of that game. I actually appreciate Liam Cohen being like, you know what? I don't want the Jaguars job. You know, I like living in Tampa. I actually have a good quarterback. You know, I don't need to develop, you know, one that we've already given money to. Mm-hmm. And then the Jaguars yesterday was like, oh, maybe we should do what everyone's been telling us for the last, like, month, which is, like, you probably need a new GM and you need a new coach.
That's yeah. right.
Andy Reid is a finalist for Coach of the Year, which is...
Well, congratulations to him. That's an achievement in and of itself.
Right.
Oh, I mean, like, massive congrats to him, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing that he has 300 wins, ladies and gentlemen, 300. There's basically two coaches that matter since the turn of the century. It's Bill Belichick and it's Andy Reid. So congratulations to him for being a finalist. He probably won't win.
Well, talking about this game on Sunday, it's a big game for Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, but this is kind of like that Sean McDermott game too, because like here he is 3 years ago getting the first opportunity, still yet to get a win. It's AFC Championship time. Eventually, you got to get yourself and Josh Allen to the big game. How big is this that this game is for Sean McDermott as well that is just for Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes?
Because Sean McDermott is an Andy Reid disciple, because he's grown over the course of his career, like you said, Dusty, I think he's had better teams, right? I think the 13-second team is honestly probably the best top-to-bottom roster the Bills have ever had during this run. And so it's unfortunate that they lost that game. And that partly due to his coaching, you know, in those final 13 seconds. If not now, man, it's got to come sooner rather than later. I would tell Sean McDermott, hey, the reason you've lost to the Chiefs in dramatic, heartbreaking fashion is because your special teams has not been good against the Chiefs, just point blank. Like, Tyler Bass missed a field goal last year. You ran a Disney movie-esque fake punt to Damar Hamlin when you had no business doing that. And, of course, hey, you didn't squib it. You just kicked it through the end zone. You are a defensive-minded coach. You let them get into field goal range. Josh Allen, I'm not necessarily concerned with. But I do think for McDermott, it comes down to, you know, you've got to mitigate all the advantages that Andy Reid has based on all of his experience. So if the Bills win on Sunday, it will be a crowning achievement for him, for Brendan Bean, the general manager there, obviously Josh Allen. They will be, I believe, the presumptive favorites in the Super Bowl, which will present its own challenge. But, hey, man, figure out a way to cover Travis Kelce. Figure out a way to, like, not have, like, soul-sucking plays on special teams. And don't be afraid of the moment. I think the biggest sign of his growth being Sean McDermott is it's fourth and two. Sure, we can kick a field goal. But, hey, thankfully you've seen it enough by now that you know we should probably go for it because I don't want to give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes with a chance to win the game or for the game to continue to be a one-score possession versus it being a two-score possession. So he's going to have to continue to do that, but make the right risky plays, not do something that is completely out of character. That will be his challenge on Sunday.
I feel like whoever has a turnover in this game is going to be the team that loses. Like, I know it's so simple to say it that way, but the Chiefs haven't had one since the Buffalo game. Buffalo hardly turns the ball over as well. I feel like if one of these teams turns it over, that could be the difference in this thing.
It could. Now, I do want to remind people that, like, this is why I say I think that 13-second team was actually better. And, hey, I might be wrong. But the 13-second team was better because they had a much better consistent defense, you know, when they weren't playing prevent with 13 seconds on the clock. It helps that you have Von Miller, who's obviously in, like, the Travis Kelce range of greatness. Gregory Rousseau's a very good player. I still think even if the Chiefs turn the ball over once, maybe even twice, they can still get down the field. I want to remind everybody, including you guys, we all saw with what it was like 3-4 minutes left. And we're just like, man, 8-point game. Okay, Lamar, let's see it. This is the time. He went right down the field, kids. And by the way, he didn't have Zay Flowers. He had Rashad Bateman. He wasn't even trying to throw to Baltimore Andrews because of the fumble. And he had Isaiah Likely. And they went right down the field when everybody in the stadium knew, oh, they can't use Derrick Henry anymore. We've actually got them in the perfect game script to where, hey, we've made them one-dimensional. And Lamar Jackson went right down the field. So I know the turnovers in the first matchup are a little bit tricky because it's like, hey, you can't give the ball to the other team at midfield to start the game, Patrick. You cannot do that. And the second interception was, as Patrick said yesterday to us at the podium, that was more out of like, it's fourth down, I got to throw the ball. Like, I can't take a sack here. So your risk obviously goes higher than it normally would in a normal game. I think the safeties can be beaten. That includes DeMar Hamlin, of course. Bo Nix's best pass of the game was right over his head. So you have multiple weapons with Marquise Brown, Xavier Worthy, of course. DeAndre Hopkins should be more in the game plan. And then, yes, let's see if Matt Milano, once and for all, perhaps for the last time, can you cover Travis Kelce like once when it matters? Because guess what, kids? I haven't seen it once in the postseason when it has actually mattered.
Nate, I want to bring this up because I think when you look at this game, it's so just fine-tooth comb where you can find an advantage one team or the other. That's why it's one versus two. These are the two best teams in the AFC. But I would think the biggest advantage when it comes to this game, Chiefs over Bills or Bills over Chiefs, would be the Chiefs side on defense over the Bills. I think they just have the better defense. I think when you hear the cliches of defense wins championships and, you know, when the playoffs start, defense becomes, you know, much more modulated when it comes to the game. The yep. biggest advantage, I think, in this matchup for me is the Chiefs defense over Buffalo's defense.
And to your point, Dusty, can you get more consistent pressure on Josh Allen than you did in the first matchup? There's reason to believe that because you will be at home, which means it'll be, you know, very loud. The Bills will have to go on a silent count, and we just saw what that's like for, you know, not a great offensive line in Houston, but it leads to 8 sacks when, you know, Houston never had the lead. And again, once we know you have to pass the ball, our pass rushers can really get active. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest player that people should be talking about more is Charles Omenihue. He unlocks everything for George Karlaftis, and he takes less of a burden off of Chris Jones. Chris Jones doesn't have to be Hall of Fame amazing every third down. Now, he can obviously do it, you know, here and there at a certain point in the game, and we watched that last week against Houston where he just immediately eliminates a potential, you know, scoring drive for Texas and makes them push, you know, punt the ball away. But I do think Charles Omenihue with the strip sack, his ability to go inside and outside, you know, hey, unlike the first matchup, Josh Allen might be better contained in the pocket because you have Chris Jones, you have George Karlaftis, you have Charles Omenihue, you might sprinkle in Mike Dana or Tershawn Wharton as the fourth guy. And now it just becomes, can you tackle? I think that was the other issue in the first matchup. The Chiefs had 13 missed tackles, fellas,
wow,
according to Pro Football Focus, in the loss to the Bills. That is the most missed tackles they've had this season. Last week against Houston, I know Houston is not Buffalo, 1 missed tackle.
Wow.
So if you get pressure on the quarterback and he has to get the ball out sooner than he wants, now it's about rallying and tackling. If they tackle on Sunday, if they get pressure on Josh Allen, the Chiefs will go back to the Super Bowl.
I love the fact that you brought up Charles Omenihue because Dusty and I have talked for the last few weeks about the difference he's made with George Karlaftis. And Karlaftis is now 4 sacks away from being the all-time sack leader in Chiefs history in the postseason. Have you ever seen anybody benefit more from somebody coming back than like on defense than George Karlaftis has benefited from Charles Omenihue?
No. I mean, it's been really striking because the quarterback has to move off his traditional spot. Or I think the better way to explain it actually is, okay, if I'm getting consistent pressure from Chris Jones, I can move to the left or I can move to the right and sort of reset myself and figure out where my options are. But if you're doing that and George Karlaftis is chasing from behind and, you know, man, I can't really scramble as much as I want because Charles Omenihue is getting pressure, oh, wait, why is this guy that is like a maniac chasing me from behind? That's George Karlaftis. Mm-hmm. It's happened to Russell Wilson. It's happened to C.J. Stroud. It's happened to a lot less quarterbacks since Charles Lemieux came back on Black Friday. And it's just been something that we've watched. I remember when you know, the first game where you really noticed it was when the Chiefs beat Cleveland. It was the first game in that, you know, three games in 11-day stretch. Uh-huh. And George Karlaftis had a very good game because, oh, yeah, that's right. Now I can just chase the quarterback because we're getting pressure enough to where he's not comfortable in the pocket. And as Andy Reid said on Monday, guys, no one is as relentless in terms of down-to-down effort than George Karlaftis. That's why he got three sacks. It's not because, you know, Steve Spagnuolo schemed up some great pass rushing plan. He was mostly just doubling Nico Collins, which, you know, smart on you. But it's the relentless effort, the tenacity from Karlaftis to get to the quarterback because he understands, hey, once that guy's uncomfortable, I got all the time in the world to chase him down. And eventually I'm going to do it in a way that can really help the defense. It's marvelous that no one – I'm glad you guys are talking about Charles Lemieux, but I don't get that sense from a lot of people, even though I think he's been a real key to the defense being as good as it can possibly be. And even for Buffalo, like, I don't think you should see Najee Johnson much, but, you know, they have Jalen Watson, they have Charles Lemieux. That's a very – those are two very important pieces to the defense that were not available in November.
I just looked at Dusty, and I can't believe more people aren't talking about the addition of Charles. It's night and day with that guy out there.
Yeah, it really is. And by the way, the Buffalo Bills, to give them credit, and to give Sean McDermott credit, hey, when you go for it on 4th-and-2 and your quarterback does amazing work, it's great. That was the first team to snap the Chiefs' streak of holding opponents to less than 30 points since the Super Bowl, what was it, 56 or whatever, against the Philadelphia Eagles. It was basically 2 years, essentially. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody scored close to 30 since that game. And, of course, as we've said before, you get Charles Lemieux back a few weeks later. You get Jalen Watson for the playoff run. You know, the team mostly slept walked through Carolina. I think Carolina is the last team that scored 27 or more.
Yeah, they did. I'm looking at it now. That Carolina 27, then Vegas 17, the Clippers 17, Cleveland 7, Houston 19, Pittsburgh 10, and then the preseason game at the end of the year, which doesn't count.
Which does not count. Right, correct. So, hey, when Sean McDermott gets off the bus, and again, I think he needs to lean more on his offense than his defense, and again, please don't have your special team screw the game up. That's been enough heartache for Bills fans. You got to come off the bus and enter Arrowhead saying, we got to score 30. Like, we just got to score 30, because once you realize it's a one-score game, most, if not all, the advantage swings to Kansas City. They've been in this game more than you. They have more experienced players. They have a guy that has come through in the clutch time after time after time. And, oh, by the way, he just happens to have the greatest receiving tight end we've ever seen at his disposal. And, oh, by the way, like, you know, as much as Tyler Bass has improved, Harrison Butker is this version's or this decade's version of Adam Vinatieri. Like, you give him a chance to eliminate you, he will eliminate you. So get 30. Try to get up and try to squeeze and put the Chiefs, you know, on the back heel. But with this defense, it's hard outside of Josh Allen being absolutely amazing. It's hard to see the Bills scoring 30 points when no one's done it with this collection of group being this healthy, this rested. And, oh, by the way, I just want to mention this too, fellas. The Chiefs are the healthier team. They have no injuries. Right. They have literally no injuries. Everybody practiced yesterday as a full participant. And the Bills, understandably, because they didn't get the bye week, are trying to manage guys in the practice week. Like, let's not practice too hard. Let's get guys as healthy as we possibly can for Sunday's game. So you're not the healthier team. You're not the favorites. You're not at home. Somehow score 30. I don't know how it happens. Maybe it's turnovers like you guys have said. But this defense, I'd be surprised if they gave up 30 at home even for as dynamic as Josh Allen is.
No doubt about it. And a little stat nugget before we get you out of here. Since Omenihue has been back, Karloftis has 7 sacks. So something, incredible. Obviously 3 last week. But
it's
night and day.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's
Nate, enjoy the best game of the year in Arrowhead one last time. And, let's get a W and go on to New Orleans and party together on Bourbon Street with some snowballs.
Yeah, exactly right. Nothing like hurricanes and snowballs. That's Lord.
No doubt about it.
Better not be snowing when we're there, or I'm asking for a refund.
I feel like that had a different meaning back in the 80s. Nate, we'll take care. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, fellas.
You bet. Nate Taylor, presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them. 816-221-1750. Coming up on the other side, we'll play something that Nate Taylor had to say there, plus Karloftis and Bills players. That's the audio we'll get on the other side here. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back into 96.5 The Fan, home for Kansas City Chiefs football, K-State Athletics, Royals baseball. Vern's Hot Stove just around the corner. That's right, baseball damn near here. Thank you, Kansas City Chiefs, for going on the runs that you go on. Because next thing you know, you're going to blink your eyes, and February is going to be here next week.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, you're going to be like, wait a minute. Why do I hear birds chirping to Matt Cotrero on the radio?
Yeah.
Because spring training
is here.
Oh, opening days in less than 2 months, probably.
Yeah. March 27th or 28th, like that.
Somewhere around there.
I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about the polar bear, right? Pete Alonso.
Oh,
I think the Royals should sign him.
Stop it.
Nobody's signing the guy.
There's probably a reason for that. And, like, where's he going to play?
He can play first base. Vinny can be your DH. Vinny gets hurt a lot. You got to have a backup plan there.
But Alonso's going to want to play, like, 140 games.
Vinny can DH. It's fine.
Then what do you do with Sal when he's not catching?
You take a break. You'll figure it out. Things tend to work themselves out.
He's also going to want a lot of money.
Well, but who's giving him a lot of money right now? Do the Dodgers have any more deferred money to give to him?
Of course. The Dodgers, why don't they go get him right now?
He's probably going to get one of these contracts that's going to pay him some money this year, and then there's going to be a bunch of opt-outs in it because he's probably going to end up going somewhere where he ultimately doesn't want to go.
I just don't want him to come to, like, the Central. Like, don't go to, like, Cleveland. Because he's the kind of guy that, like, you just hate to play against.
This is the problem with Scott Boras, though. This is how he messes up baseball. Like, this guy should have been signed before the holidays.
Well, maybe his magma wasn't that hot. His liquid hot magma, as Eric Hosmer once described as.
We talk about all this stuff in baseball that's wrong. Scott Boras has killed the game of baseball more than anything. The best way to fix baseball is to ban Scott Boras.
Saquon Barkley. I swear, Saquon Barkley is the best. Right? We survived the Giants, and now the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. Lord have mercy, man.
Saquon. We never heard of him.
Saquon Barkley. I swear, Saquon Barkley is the best. Right? We survived the Giants, and now the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. Lord have mercy, man.
Who
was that?
It's a Washington
fan. Yeah. A Washington fan? Mm-hmm.
Saquon Barkley.
What does he mean we survived the Giants?
He survived the Giants.
Oh,
he's
talking about
Saquon.
Barkley. Yeah, Barkley. I thought it was his team. I was like, what are we getting at here?
Survive Saquon, bro.
Somebody that the Bills have to survive is Charles Omenihue. And Nate Taylor had the quote here of the importance of one Charles Omenihue.
I think the biggest player that people should be talking about more is Charles Omenihue. He unlocks everything for George Karloftis. And he takes less of a burden off of Chris Jones. Chris Jones doesn't have to be Hall of Fame amazing every third down. Now, he can obviously do it, you know, here and there at a certain point in the game. And we watched that last week against Houston where he just immediately eliminates a potential, you know, scoring drive for Texas and makes them push, you know, punt the ball away. But I do think Charles Omenihue with the strip sack, his ability to go inside and outside, you know, hey, unlike the first matchup, Josh Allen might be better contained in the pocket because you have Chris Jones, you have George Karloftis, you have Charles Omenihue, you might sprinkle in Mike Dana or Tershawn Wharton as the fourth guy, and now it just becomes, can you tackle?
The other important note is, if I believe his first game back was that Cleveland Browns game, the first of all those many, is that right?
Yeah.
Or the Black Friday game, I guess you could say, was maybe his first game back. Either way, like when he first got his, you know, the pressure started to come around, Guess who got their first career interception when he came back?
Trent McDuffie did. Exactly. Yeah, he changes the whole defense. And I said to you going to break, and you had a really good response, almost like, oh, yeah, probably right about that. I should have thought of that. But you know, Nate Taylor said not enough people are talking about Charles Omenihu. I said, I can't believe not enough people are talking about him. And you go, because he's not a household name, right? And he's not a household name. He really is.
But we talked about this yesterday as well. Yeah. Like, it's like, how come nobody's talking about Charles Omenihu? No one knows who Charles Omenihu is.
But in Kansas City, everybody should know who Charles Omenihu is. I just don't get the sense that Nate meant national. I think he meant like everywhere. Like not enough from Chiefs fans is being talked about Charles Omenihu. He's a difference maker.
I think the problem that you get in this game is that the obvious storylines, and this is all about how what you follow, what you like. Like some people are like, well, I want to hear what this guy's saying because he normally takes this angle. This game, there's really not a bad angle to take off and focus on. Like you could take the high road and, you know, you could talk about Andy Reid's legacy. You could do what you like to say, the low hanging fruit, and be like, this game's about quarterback versus quarterback and just focus on that all week. Or you can dive a little deeper and be like, hey, since Omenihu's been back, Carl Loftus has 7 sacks.
Yeah.
Since Omenihu's been back, Trent McDuffie's had 2 interceptions. Since Omenihu's been back, this defense looks better. And oh, by the way, he didn't play in this game against Josh Allen. And then Nate Taylor dives it in a little bit more and says, now you can kind of stop that up the middle run sort of look that Josh Allen can do in a delayed, you know, RPO. If that's the case, then I like my chances with Josh Allen trying to make a throw in this game as opposed to knowing the right situation when to take off on his legs. Because to me, it's weird to say this out loud, but on third down, I fear Josh Allen's legs more than I fear his arm.
Well, that's the same thing the opposing fan base should have about Patrick Mahomes, though, too. I mean, like, if you're not going into a game as a Buffalo fan fearing Patrick Mahomes' legs on third down, then you've been doing this wrong.
Not necessarily saying not fearing them, but like...
No, I'm with you. I am 100% with you. I think the legs of these two quarterbacks on third down are more important than their arms on third down, because if they get out, they know how to run. Both of them know how to run, and both of them run and crush your soul. That's what Patrick Mahomes has been doing since he came into this league, and learned that, obviously, from Alex Smith for that first year. But Josh Allen does that same type of stuff. Like, there's nothing worse than being a fan and having 3rd and 6 and everybody's covered and the quarterback sneaks out and gains 7 yards and it's first down. That's a soul crushing play for the crowd. And it's a soul crushing play for those players too. Cause like we did everything we were supposed to do. He just escaped and got outside and made a big play. And I've seen fans collapse when Patrick Mahomes done it. And I've done it when Josh Allen's done that kind of stuff too. No, there's nothing worse than that play.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's just that's where you can literally disrupt the entire Buffalo offense, because if you have Jones and Carl Loftus on the outside, they have a better chance at, like, you know, getting around those tackles, or if they do want to run stretch plays to Cook, they have the advantage. If you want up the middle, Omenihu and Jones, advantage. If Josh Allen wants to sit back there, run RPO and try to sneak up the middle or one of those, you know, between the tackle runs, you do have Omenihu there, then you also have the backup in your line. That's what I'm saying. Every level of this defense is affected by Charles Omenihu and the way that he gives his presence on the defensive line.
And the defense can't be good unless that defensive line is doing their job.
It all starts.
And they got better by adding Charles Omenihu back. Like, if we see this game and George Karlaftis has a couple of sacks, we're going to be praising George Karlaftis. But Karlaftis won't have those sacks unless Charles Omenihu is out there on the field, because we've seen the difference that he can make. If Josh Allen doesn't run for a lot of yards, a lot of that has to do with Charles Omenihu allowing Chris Jones to play better, because there's somebody now that has to worry about Charles Omenihu. It's all a trickle-down effect, and I think Charles Omenihu is probably one of the more unsung players, even from a Chiefs fan perspective, that are on this roster right now, because I always think every year you look back and go, man, where would we have been without that guy? Mm-hmm. Charles Omenihu could be the answer to that question this year when they're raising Lombardi. Where would they have been if Charles Omenihu didn't come back?
Somebody in the text line says, Charles is filling the spot that Carlos Dunlap used to occupy. It's a necessary component. I totally agree. Think about what he does for Felix Ndouke Izama.
Yeah.
Think about what he does for Wharton.
How good has FAU been since you know, Charles Omenihu has been back, right? He's been a different player, too.
It's a difference. Championship game coverage brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer partner of your Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up, we'll go to our Byron O'Vinny. Casey.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Black Rock, we'll talk to him on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan on a show that we call Fesco and Dusty with Mac Morey.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
What the hell's wrong with your station?
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.